If you'd like to call roll.
Commissioner Ashley, present. Commissioner Shanna,
present.
Commissioner Hargrave,
present.
And Commissioner Davis,
present.
And for staff, I am Kelly Housley Glover. I'm the planning director, and with me, I've got Jesse Smith and Chris Senders.
Okay, this meeting is being recorded and will be publicly available. All participants must mute themselves unless they are speaking. Lines providing feedback while not speaking will be muted to ensure others can hear. Only you can unmute yourself using the mic icon. If you are participating by phone, unmute yourself by dialing *6. Participants behaving inappropriately will be promptly removed from the meeting. The chair will specifically invite participants for public comment at appropriate times, so please be patient and wait to be called on. Please refrain from using comment feature unless directed by the chair. It will distract from the intended flow of the hearings. Is there any public comment on items not listed on the agenda? If there is, please unmute your mic now and share any comment that you might have for items not on the agenda today. Okay, not hearing any, we'll open the hearing. The public hearing is now open for the purpose of the Planning Commission's consideration of land use application file 921-21-00045. An update to the land use and development ordinance, including revisions to chapters 1, 3, 6, 7, 14, 19, and 20, and the introduction of the comprehensive plan. The procedure I'd like to follow tonight is A, the planning department staff will present the reports, B, provide an opportunity for the public to testify, C, the planning commission will deliberate and make recommendations to the Board of County Commissioners, and the hearing today is scheduled for 2 hours. We will try to conclude the hearing by 5 p.m. Testimony will be limited to 3 minutes, and staff will time each comment period and mute when the 3 minutes have expired. The rules of evidence today are as follows. No person shall present irrelevant, immaterial, or unduly repetitious testimony or evidence. If you had submitted written comments, please do not restate an oral testimony unless you have further information to add. Evidence received shall be of a quality that reasonable persons rely upon in the conduct of their daily affairs. Testimony and evidence must be directed towards the criteria applicable to the subject hearing. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by a statement or evidence sufficient to afford the commission and parties an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes further appeal based on that issue. If everyone could please mute themselves and hold questions till the end of the staff's presentation, we will begin the staff presentation at this time.
Thank you, Chair. I'm gonna try to do the double duty on this one so that folks on the Zoom can also see, so bear with me. So again, for the record, my name is Kelly Housley Glover. I'm the management director and the project manager for the new updates. I am going to go over the overview of proposed written revisions, business for updating, the process to revise, and then a revision summary with the recommendations to the planning commission. This is a multi-year project. Multi-year update. This is our second year. We'll be having another year of updates. I encourage folks who are attending by Zoom or in the room to visit our website, wasco2040.com. You'll see the subjects for next year. Really important that you're engaged early in that process. But I wanted to express today that the majority of our updates today are mandatory. They're things that are passed into state law since 2012. We've been implementing it directly from state law. And so there should be minimal impact. The optional updates are by and large adding provisions to our requirements rather than taking anything away. And the exception would be the military airspace overlay, where that's really targeting predominantly energy facilities. So, and I'll go into that in some depth, but I just wanted folks to know straight away that the majority of what we're talking today is actually mandatory or it's increasing opportunities for residents rather than taking.
Hey, Kelly, I hate to interrupt you, but is there a chance you could move closer to the microphone? The echo is so bad, you can barely make out what you're saying.
Chair, is this helpful?
Yes.
Chair, is it helpful if I speak into the microphone?
Man, it's really bad. It's very hard to understand what you're saying. I wonder if you could call in and talk on the phone, Kelly.
Let's talk. Let me try. Thanks. Sorry, this is the first hybrid meeting that we conducted, and it's actually state law required that we do hybrid meetings now. So we're going to have to do a little bit of on the fly troubleshooting.
Yeah, I'm not trying to throw a wrench, but I just don't think people are going to be able to understand what you're saying very clearly. It's very hard.
You are in the meeting now. There are 17 participants in the meeting.
Okay, Chair, I'm tapping into the phone. Is that helpful?
Do you think do you have the speaker on in the room still?
Unfortunately, I don't turn off our recording. So.
Boy, I don't know. That's bad. You're probably just as good at not doing the phone, Kelly.
Let me see if I can turn the volume down and clap. Hold on a second. Okay, Chair, does that help?
That's better. That's definitely better.
I'm going to proceed and then stop me. The problem is if I talk softly, people won't hear me ever. So,
man, I think it's just the room, Kelly.
Well, I'm going to proceed. Hopefully, my slides are representative enough. So today we have a series of updates. The carbon four zones, as I mentioned, we've had a lot of changes to state law that have occurred since 2012. The majority of those things are mandatory. They were indicated in the graphs. And we do have some optional updates. One optional update for the AFCU zone and then some of the warm zone, but I'll be highlighting it. Yeah, the adoption of the new chapter 14, which is communication facilities, and that's quite consistent with state and federal regulations work, basically cell towers and met towers. We have some updates to chapter 19. Those are by state law. We have one optional update that I'll overview. We had to add in July psilocybin related time-based and manner regulations, so I'll be reviewing those. It is a mandatory opt-in system for Oregon, and so we have a little leeway into determining where and psilocybin manufacturing and service centers take place. And then we do have some housekeeping. So that's just cleaning up some definitions and some other minor updates to chapters. So the primary reasons for the update were to streamline our Pluto, to make it more efficient, more flexible in terms of our timelines, again, making those rules consistent with the reading to what we're implementing in state law. We also have some aspects of the plan that are based on comprehensive plan update that we got feedback we got for the comprehensive plan connecting Los Angeles 3, specifically with our farm zone and our energy facility. And we're also looking to ensure coordination with our partners, like the Department of Defense or the military, and improve resiliency by basically removing any barriers that folks have flagged to us as problematic. So one example of that would be removing permitting requirements for residential solar. So the process is consistent year over year for our new Planning Development Ordinance update. We take January through April to really do data analysis. In this case, we had a model order update that was conducted by some consultants in 2016. Staff also conducted an audit, and that was specifically looking at our farm and forest zones and ways that we were seeing with state law requirements. So that applied to any criteria that was in compliance and also made suggestions for mandatory updates that we needed to make. We also, staff analysis also included understanding what military airspace kind of encroachment issues, what types of development represented encroachment to the existing military airspace. We did some comparative research specifically with our communication facilities tracker. And then again, we folded in comprehensive plan feedback that we got when we toured the county for some years talking about some of these issues. We also had our attorney give an overview to make sure that we were consistent with all laws and regulations, and released drafts in April and August to the public and started to take public feedback as of August. Drafts, with the exception of suicide prevention, come in July based on how the state rolled those regulations out. Everything else was released in April and May. So I just briefly want to touch on our public input activities. We have a robust website. Those of you who have not visited it, I encourage you to go there. We have one-page summaries, there are videos, graphs, surveys, polls. We have a lot of social media postings where we do have a high volume of interaction. On our website, you can sign up to have an email newsletter. So if you're interested in what we're doing next year, it's a really good way for it to come directly to your inbox. We have interactive drafts this year, which is something we're going to continue next year. That gives you the ability to go on and comment or ask questions in the drafts, specifically the areas of concern for you. We did press releases with all of our major local news. We've got ads in local newspapers. We had open houses in Dallas and Tide Valley, virtual open houses, ask and planner meetings where people could submit questions and we would answer. We had an overview meeting that was virtual. We did mail a postcard out in April. So everybody in the county with an address basically got a notification we were doing something. And then a more official mail notice in August. So in total, we have about 5 months of public outreach and significant resource enlistment. So I'm going to give a brief summary of the farm and forest updates at this point. Let me just grab my water for just a second. Law that occurred since 2012, and so we added those into the farm and forest chapters. Those would have been the optional updates throughout the grass were indicated by some moving number lines, and we tried to make it very clear if you were reading the grass what was required and what was optional. There were some updates needed for midway to references, so where we reference state law or other sections of the LUDO. We moved some criteria around. So you'll see some red in the graphs that means something moved from one section to another. And again, that's an effort to be more consistent with state law. The thing that we really tried to focus public feedback on was those optional uses. So these are new uses in the farm and one forest zone that we needed public input on. These things, we actually, these optional uses, we did start seeding this to the public last year. So in all actuality, there's been 2 years of public opportunity for comment on these new uses. Nothing changed this year. We just didn't hear enough from the public, so we pushed it back a year. We do have some setbacks. One of the things that we've heard from farmers is that is marked by some of the setbacks in the farm zone are resulting in folks needing to site dwellings and productive grounds. So what we've done is drop down those, recommending dropping down those setback requirements. And then one thing that we proposed is also moving non-farm dwellings to a slightly lesser standard of review. So overall, the channels of public input that we've seeded through the last 2 years, this reflects the preference of community members surveyed. We had about between 35 and 40 points of contact. And folks were almost by and large in favor of including all the new optional uses and zones. The only one that was kind of close was the facility for farm or processing farm products. And we also had some additional non-uses, but land additions for switching criteria. So one provision was to allow for land additions for public service utilities. So that's like a Duke's a prime example that we have happening now where they need to go into the farm zone to expand their wastewater treatment facility. And in order to facilitate that, they need to cut off a piece of farmland to do that. And so this would enable us to make that kind of advantage under the 1.6. The other thing we asked folks about was whether they, the non-farm dwellings, whether they wanted to see that as a conditional use or a type 2 use. And we did see the majority of folks prefer keeping it as a conditional use. We also added an agritourism. That was something we talked to the community quite extensively about during the Rockford County 2040. And what we started to hear last year were some significant concerns about wildfire, water, and other impacts to adjacent farmers or neighbors. And so what we did was add some additional criteria and restrictions at the end of the EFU chapter, the A1 chapter. And the feedback that we've heard about that additional criteria was very supportive. So it felt like we really listened to them and addressed their concerns. We also didn't receive any critical feedback on those additional recommendations. So my overall recommendations for the planning commission this evening, we did receive comment from one partner agency, the Department of State Lands, and received some additional feedback from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. That they would like us to retain the language wildlife habitat in section 3.212. And the reason we struck that initially was that was on the advice of the audit that was conducted in 2016. But I think that Department of State Lands has a really good argument for why we should keep it in. There really shouldn't be any negative impact. So staff is agreeing with Department of State Lands, we should keep that language in and not strike it. As I indicated, we had the majority support for all new optional farm uses, including the additional agritourism criteria. So we're recommending tonight to the planning commission that we approve all new and optional farm uses. We also received support for the land additions for utility facilities. And so we are in favor of moving ahead with that. Did not receive any negative feedback or other feedback about the new farm dwelling setbacks. So we encourage the commission to adopt that as recommended. As I indicated, the preference seemed to be for non-farm dwellings to be retained as a conditional use. So we'll have to modify the draft, but we're recommending that we retain it as a conditional use. And then we did have significant feedback about the accessory forest dwelling, specifically requiring deed restrictions for certain elements of the criteria requirements. So we're recommending that the planning commission deliberate on additional criteria for the accessory forest dwellings in the FU zone. So chapter 14, as I mentioned, that is our communications facilities chapter. We're required to have standalone chapter for communication facilities, and it needs to be consistent with state and federal rule. Communication facilities or cell towers are largely regulated by the Federal Communications Commission. We did, on the advice of citizens who gave us feedback from Boston County 2040, also looked at best practices for neighboring counties. And that's specifically to address some concerns about abandonment or visual suburbs. We didn't receive any public input on this topic, so we are recommending that the Planning Commission adopt as directed. Chapter 19, which is our energy facilities chapter, was by and large revised in conjunction with state law requirements. So there are some new added requirements for large scale energy facilities to add formation of agency partners, particularly early on in the process. So it looks like the FNW, the State Historic Preservation Office, and there's also some coordination with the Department of Defense. So we also added required life safety criteria to make sure that life safety is one of those considerations we're evaluating when approving commercial energy projects. The only optional update within this chapter was at the request of citizens who wanted us to remove permit requirements for residential roof-mounted solar projects that are under the 35-foot height limit. So we are recommending the Planning Commission today that you approve removing those permit requirements and then accept all the other edits as proposed. And in support of the optional update, you can see we had almost 60 folks responding to an online survey, and with the exception of one person, everybody was in favor of removing those permitting requirements. So the military airspace overlay zone, we do have a representative from the Oregon Military Department here to address any specific concerns that the Planning Commission has. Greg, to give some context, the military airspace has been sort of federally adopted since the 50s. So this has existed in Wasco County since the 1950s. Really wasn't an issue because we're largely an agricultural community, but as we started to see the increase in commercial energy facilities with large wind turbines, we started to see conflicts, not locally, but elsewhere in the state. So this is in lockstep with a statewide ORISA project to, again, raise awareness among planners and also community members and developers that these military airspaces exist and that we need to have urban coordination. So we are requiring coordination for large projects that are 100 feet in height. And again, that's just to make sure there's not any encroachment into the military airspace. This, by and large, is going to impact energy facilities and cell towers and that meteorological towers. So it really shouldn't impact our farms and our farm lines and farm buildings and other types of uses. Part of this is we do need to amend the comprehensive plan to adopt this as an overlay zone. And again, the map is not new, it would just be new for us to hold it into our map. And what that does is enables us to broadly share that with customers. Another aspect of this is that we do need to wrap up in the comprehensive plan and modify the environmental protection districts and call them overlay zones as we changed the comments last year. Today, we have received no public input about the military airspace overlay zone. So we recommend that we adopt the overlay zone now with the comprehensive updates. As I mentioned, there was some additional housekeeping that's affiliated with the updates. These are chapters that are in support of all the other updates. So we had to add some definitions in places where we were introducing new types of uses, for example, the farm zone, or correcting some definitions that reflect our audits. We had two various chapters that were split off. We are proposing to combine those. And that enables us to use chapter 7477. There are also a couple other minor updates to the site plan and non-conforming use chapters based on some of the updates. And these are mostly non-substantive or mandatory. It shouldn't have any significant impact. And we did not receive any public input. So we're recommending that it is adopted as revised. So psilocybin was not something that was originally on our scope, but became a part of our scope as the rules started to roll out, and it became apparent that we needed to put into place some time, place, manner restrictions. It's a mandatory opt-in legislation. There is the ability for voters to have put an opt-out provision on the ballot. I don't believe anybody's done that to date, so we're forging ahead with time, place, manner. The application process opens in January 2020, next year, so in a couple of months. And the state Oregon Health Authority expects us to be able to issue mandatory compatibility statements at early January. So that's why we're needing to speed up this process, contrary to what we typically do. There are two components to psilocybin. One is manufacturing, which is actually growing the mushrooms, and processing, which is basically picking the mushrooms and running them for distribution. And the main components of the regulation. First is that it is considered a farm use and a farm activity. The second thing is it has to be grown indoors, cannot be grown outside. The other component of the psilocybin regulation is the service centers. So that's where they're actually distributing the psilocybin for specific use. And so it's not like a retail situation with cannabis where folks can go in and purchase psilocybin. It actually have to go to a licensed facility with a licensed facilitator who administers the psilocybin and then monitors that person. I think with the intent of helping them with sort of a clinical experience. And so the service centers can't happen in residential zones, and they cannot happen in as a home occupation, so they cannot happen in any dwellings. There are also some additional restrictions. It needs to be 1,000 feet from schools, for example. So what we're proposing to do, and we talked to the Board of County Commissioners, and they had a consensus on this, was to restrict currently, because this is so new, restrict the service centers to our commercial zones. And we added some additional restrictions that are compatible with restrictions that we place on marijuana in Boston County. And really, the goal of this is we were one of the first people in the state to come out in front of these temporary attendance and manner restrictions. Every county that is pursuing this is following in lockstep. And the concern is that we're not really sure what this service center type business would look like in a farm zone, whether conflict with farm activity. And so we're going to play it slow and cautiously for the first year, and then we always have the ability to reevaluate in the future. Commissioners, we did receive comment, I believe yesterday. It was sent out to you as part of an amended packet requesting that we reduce those non-mandatory distances from things like daycare and recreation sites in those commercial sites. So I have a summary of what the planning commission is deciding, and I can leave this up for your reference, planning commissioners. So the first thing is to approve, deny, or edit mandatory changes. The only consideration staff has presented tonight is that the edit related to that Department of State lands comment to maintain the original language of section 3.212 to not strike the term wildlife habitat from that language. And the bulk of what I believe the commission will focus on tonight and the comments we'll focus on tonight are our optional changes. So the staff is recommending the planning commission, based on feedback we received from the community, consider adding some additional provisions to the accessory forest dwellings that are proposed to be permitted in the Appalachian zone. Optional EFU uses, staff proposes that planning commission adopt as recommended, including the additional agritourism criteria that seem to find favor with those who are concerned about wildfire, water, and other issues. As we didn't receive any public feedback, we're encouraging the planning commission to adopt the new farm dwelling setbacks as proposed. We are encouraging the planning commission to adopt the military airspace overlay zone as proposed. We're asking the planning commission to adopt the chapter 7 and related commercial chapter revisions related to timeliness manner for psilocybin. But obviously, you have some public feedback that you'll need to take out of consideration. And then finally, we encourage the planning commission, based on all the public feedback, to adopt the chapter 19 removal of required permits for residential roof mounted solar under 35 feet. So, summary recommendations again, keeping in that wildlife habitat, make sure that the non-farm dwelling doesn't move to the subject of the standards, so keep that in conditional use, and then accessory boards will also see some additional criteria to mitigate any concerns. And with that, I will complete my presentation.
Is there a way you can turn on closed captioning?
I can see that you do that.
It is super hard to hear you, Kelly. I mean, you got to stay tight, close with what you're saying.
I'm looking. I don't see any.
So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the planning commission has this time.
Okay, commissioners, if you have any questions for the staff before moving to the next presentation, you can ask them now. Nobody has any questions. Russ, Mike, who else is on today?
Vicky's here in person, Chair.
Hey, Vicky.
Not right now.
Okay, let's move on to audience participation. The staff has compiled a list of those who registered to comment. Jen Z, would you like to call them out?
Chair, we can start with those who are in person, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine. You guys can take the order you'd like there.
Okay, we have Ken Burt. Ken?
I'd like to remind everybody to state their name and address for the record too, please.
Okay, next chair, we have Mike Bellamy.
I signed in by mistake. I didn't realize it was for speaking. I just thought it was meeting.
No problem. Brad Kayser?
Same thing, sorry.
Just signed in, okay. No problem. Steve? No. Nope, no comment, okay. Amy?
She's on the Zoom, I think.
So I thought I saw her in person. No, she must have disappeared. Okay, and Casey? Okay, let's switch to those on Zoom here.
Are we going with online people now, Kelly?
Yes, Chair. We're just toggling the list around here in a sec.
Okay.
We're a little rusty with the in-person presentations, so.
I'm a little rusty too, so don't feel bad.
And been 2.5 years.
So, on the list is Tricia Walton.
So the first person chair we have on the list is Tricia.
I'm here and I just logged in to watch the video. I didn't really have a comment.
Okay, thank you.
Comment is Megan Wagenblast.
Megan Wagenblast.
Hi, this is Megan Wagenblast. I'm at 6330 Kelly Cutoff Road in the Dalles. And I was just once again calling about living out in a non-protected fire zone and want to keep addressing those concerns. So want to make sure that those continue to get heard. I know that there's supposed to be some, you know, voluntary people are supposed to write in and say, yes, we're having an event of 25 plus people or whatever that is. My question is who is going to enforce those laws, making sure that those permits are being issued and also that there is appropriate fire personnel on there. Thank you.
Next one is Michael Hottie.
So Chair, the next person we have signed up is Michael Hottie. Michael, are you on the call?
I don't see his name.
Michael was the individual who submitted written comment about psilocybin.
The next one is
Olu. Is Olu Situ?
Yes, I'm here. So I couldn't make out all the audio, but the reason I'm attending was to learn more about what you've discussed and decided regarding commercial solar installations. Could you elaborate on, you know, what the discussion led to and what y'all are thinking about the future with that?
So, staff doesn't typically do a question and answer with citizens. So you can direct your questions to the chair and they can follow up with staff.
Okay, and he'd like, you were curious about the regulations with the solar panels?
Correct.
Okay, I will bring that up.
Thank you.
Chair, are you ready for the next commenter?
Sure.
Sheila Dooley.
Hi, Sheila Dooley, 3300 Ventzel Road, Mosier. And I have the following concerns about regarding accessory forest dwellings. I feel that they're not really needed. There are large tracts of forest land near us that have no one on site living on them or managing them on a regular basis. There's not enough work involved, especially in winter and summer months, to justify a second dwelling. I also have concerns with increased fire risk. The potential dwelling sites appear to be located in areas of high or extremely high fire risk areas. According to ODF, 96% of the fires in the areas they serve in Wasco and Hood River counties are human caused. So doubling the number of homes will double the fire risk. A fire that starts on a property in a fire district can quickly spread to ones that aren't. I also have concerns with code compliance. I feel like it's really, this would really be opening a can of worms. The proposed conditions are not enforceable unless they become deed restrictions. There's no other realistic way to monitor and enforce them over time. Otherwise, making sure it's a relative living on the property during doing forest work won't happen. The county doesn't really have the resources to look for code violations. And deed restrictions will also protect a future buyer from spending a lot of money buying a property with a second home, only to find out that it can only be occupied by a relative assisting in a forest operation. It can't be used for an Airbnb or a rental. Then the expansion of deed restrictions would also make it clear what the rules are. The proposed deed restrictions in the proposed ordinance now state that the house can't be separated from the parcel through a partition and the parcel has to be managed as a working forest. Deed restrictions need to be expanded to include the owner or relative occupancy requirement, which is D2, G and E, or is managed by the relative requirement, which is D2I, and no vacation occupancy, which is D3. An additional deed restriction not allowing any non-relative occupancy needs to be added also. The definition of who qualifies as a relative or a reference to the state statute that defines a relative for this use needs to be added. And also you need proof of relative status. Anyway, that's it. Okay, thank you for this opportunity to comment. That was it.
Okay, and Chair, we have Kristen as Martha's maybe, so we can ask Kristen Curran if she would like to testify.
Yes, hello, Kristen Curran, 2355 Osborne Cutoff Road. I first want to thank the Planning Commission and everybody that's been working on this for all the efforts you've made to, to make the information available to the public and accessible. And I do appreciate all of that, as well as appreciating your continued eye on fire and water concerns with all of the decisions that you make. I do agree that additional accessory forest dwellings should have additional requirements that would make them fairly strict for getting permission to do that. And I also do have some questions based on the audio from the Zoom, but I will follow up on that at a different time. Thank you so much.
And then Chair, I saw that Michael just logged in, so we can go back to Michael and see if he has any additional comments following his letter. Michael, do you have any comments at this time? Michael Hoddy?
Just as regarding the, my name is Michael Hoddy. I'm a Wasco County resident, and I'm addressing particularly the Chapter 7 of the little update regarding psilocybin service centers. Just wanted to make sure that everyone's aware there's quite a bit of difference between what a service center is proposed to be and what a manufacturing center is. I have no real comments whatsoever about the manufacturing centers, but in terms of the service centers, in following this issue here in Wasco County, it seems like there's not going to be much need for more than one service center, which would probably suffice for both Hood River and Wasco County. And I know we have three designated commercial sites in Wasco County. Speaking with Kelly earlier, it seemed like Ty Valley was the most likely one. I haven't been out there yet, but does anybody know what the minimum separation distances mean in terms of how many small parcels there would be within the commercially zoned areas of Ty Valley? Apparently not. Well, pretty much all of them are 1,000 feet. That's quite a good ways. The impact of a service center would really not be much more than a small, say, group therapy session. People wouldn't really be going outside or leaving the premises, and they would be staying long enough under the regulations that they would be fine leaving, although everybody will be required to have a driver when we get to that point. So I suspect that the minimum separation distances are a done deal, but I hope as the process evolves over the next few years that we can increase the possible siting for a service center within Wasco County. That's really all I have to say on that. Thank you for the chance to speak.
Thank you.
And Chair, that concludes the folks on our list to testify.
Okay. Does the commission have any questions for anybody that's testified?
I guess I have a question just in regards to the last testimony, why High Valley would be the center versus the Dallas where the medical centers are.
Not for me.
Yeah.
For sure. So I believe, if I'm remembering the conversation that I had with Mr. Hardy correctly, we discussed commercial zones in Wasco County that were eligible under the recommended TPM and talked about some of the constraints. And I believe what I mentioned was in our analysis, we had GIS conducting an analysis of any existing schools and any existing daycares or recreation facilities. And didn't find any of those restrictions in any of the commercial zones. So I believe my comment to Mr. Hadi was that any of these places could theoretically, even with the additional restrictions, be eligible. But we did have a discussion about the urban centers, so the Dalles and Hood River specifically, and what I was hearing from those jurisdictions about the types of rules that they were likely to adopt. And we did discuss that those might be the preferred alternative. But of course, I don't have jurisdiction over those areas, so I couldn't speak for those jurisdictions.
Okay, any other questions from the commissioners? Okay, we'll now ask for anyone who has not had the opportunity to comment but would like to do so to enter their name in chat, and we'll call on you on a first come, first serve basis. I'm not seeing any. Are you, Gen Z?
I'm not seeing anything in the chat, Chair.
Okay. If there's no further testimony and no request that the record remain open, the public hearing is closed and the Planning Commission will now enter into deliberation. Okay, if anybody has anything, any of the commissioners have anything they want to talk about, please, now is the time.
I guess I would like to address the auxiliary dwellings in the forest. I think there needs to be some very strict fire regulations implemented. And I don't think Wasco County has the ability to monitor those on a regular basis during the summer at this point.
Okay. Mike or Russ?
I don't really have any questions or comments. I appreciate everyone's testimony. I learned a lot. I don't have any questions at this time. Thanks, Chris.
No, it's the same with me, Chris. This is Mike Davis.
Okay, so what are our options here, Kelly? Because I never got a list of them, so I'm going to have to wing it. But
I'm going to go back to the slide show.
I guess I did have one. Sorry, Chris.
Go ahead.
As I felt you moving more toward closure here, a question crystallized. I had a question for you, Michael Hadi. I appreciate all the background you bring to this and the description you provided of how this stuff actually gets implemented. My question for you as an expert is, do you have any specific concerns with this Ludo update that's being proposed?
My only concern I mentioned is just how much the minimum separation distances of 1,000 feet are going to affect potential sites within the commercially designated zones.
So are you concerned that that distance is too great? Is that the...
Correct.
Okay.
Why was 1,000 feet selected? It makes a lot of sense to have 1,000 feet separation from a manufacturing center, but I just wondered what the reasoning was behind having similar distances for the service centers.
Yeah, Kelly might know best. I suspect it was analogous to the marijuana implementation, perhaps. Not sure. But retail marijuana outlets are controlled by distance similarly.
It seems statewide that many of the proposed regulations are kind of lifted from the cannabis experience, but I would argue that this is quite a bit of a different phenomena. There's no retail involved. There's always a therapist involved. And
so with regard, sorry, Mike.
No, go ahead, Russ.
With regard to psilocybin then, are you aware of how other counties have implemented this distance regulation? Is this 1,000 feet normal, or do you have any experience relative to what other counties might have done?
I don't, other than to say that once again, that it's everything is probably just taken from the cannabis retail setting.
Okay, thank you.
I did want to thank the planners for not sending the issue back to the voters. I do feel they've already spoken and they support this measure, majority of people. So thank you for proceeding ahead with coming up with the TPM regulations.
Kelly, I have a question for you because I didn't hear you address it. What the proposed new farm dwelling setbacks, I'm having a hard time finding them in the packet.
They're in the property development standards section of the A1 chapter.
Actually, I have a question for Kelly while you're checking that, Chris.
Let me grab a hard copy. And I'll tell you the exact reference to her.
Okay.
Who's going to administer this by the cellum? Is that going to be just like the marijuana? It's controlled by the same board, or
who's actually administering it, the drug to a human?
Yeah. Well,
it's a licensed facilitator.
Right. But who is going to oversee that?
Oregon Health Authority.
This packet's big, Kelly. I'm having a hard time going through it and seeing all the stuff I want to see.
Okay. It is on It starts on page PC 147, and no, that's not the correct reference. I'm sorry, Chair.
Thank you.
Can you give me the rundown on what the changes are, Kelly?
Yeah. We're dropping it, the standard down from 200 feet to
'm having a hard time finding it too.
I don't want to misquote myself because it's been a minute since I drafted it.
Are we talking about
the FBU A1? Yeah, the A1 chapter.
It starts on 127.
Well, that's the chapter, but the
development standards start page 16 on that.
Page 16?
Well, it would be page 142.
Yeah, that's right, Vicki. Thank you so much. Chair, it's on, thank you, Commissioner Ashley. It's on PC 143 is where it starts. And so if the, this is for farm dwellings, if the adjacent land is used for perennial or annual crops, grazing zone exclusive farm use and has never been cultivated, or a zone F1 or F2, the setback shall be a minimum of 100 feet. So we're reducing that from a 200-foot standard.
Okay.
If the adjacent land is not an agricultural production and is not zoned for exclusive farm use or forest use, the setback shall be a minimum of 25 feet from a property line.
Okay.
And we're reducing that from 100 feet.
And then, Kelly, on page PC 161, where it says farm dwelling under section B, are we adding and not designated rangeland or at least 320 acres? And
that's mandatory language, Chair, that's required by state law.
Okay. That's why I'm trying not to be more exclusive than state law on that stuff. Okay. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it.
Chair, did you want me to address any of the questions that commenters?
Yeah, I do have one that the question about the regulations for the solar panels, if you could touch on that before we got out of here.
Yeah, so the only thing that we're proposing, aside from removing the requirement for a permit for residential roof-mounted solar, it are requirements for state law. So it's adding in some life safety criteria, and then it's adding coordination requirements for large-scale commercial energy facilities. So it's all mandatory to be consistent with state law. And if you give me a minute, I can give you the citation. it's based on the 2019 adoption of House Bill 2329. And specifically, it was targeting Goal 5 protection. So some of this came out I believe Lake County and Deschutes County, there were some conflict with commercial energy facilities and sensitive wildlife. Chair, did you want me to address any of the other questions from commenters?
Yeah, anything that you think that sticks out. The main ones were the solar panels, and then I think the commercially zoned areas, the 1,000-foot setbacks, which I think you tried to address already.
So just to reiterate, the 1,000 feet from schools is required by state law and psilocybin, so that wasn't something that we manufactured. We did add in daycares and recreation sites to be consistent with marijuana, but it's, I think, worth mentioning to the public, our GIS is analysis of our commercial zones and didn't find any existing recreation or daycare or school facilities. So this is really just to protect any future development.
If there is a psilocybin facility, will the daycares, and if they come in later, would they have to stay away from the psilocybin facility? Is that how that works?
No, the conflict would rise with the school, so.
Okay. Just out of curiosity is the only reason.
But generally, when we permit things, we permit them with the rules that are in place at the time of permit. So we don't retroactively revoke permits. The other question, Chair, was related to fire, and I believe focused specifically on agritourism. So as I mentioned, we took into consideration a lot of public feedback we got last year related to wildfire. And I think the question was, who monitors that? It's responsibility of our code enforcement program to ensure conditions of approval are up to speed. We have revised our code compliance program to minimize nuisance cases in favor of land use, essentially to free up capacity to actively pursue conditions of approval. So it would be the intent of our program to follow up on those conditions of approval, but it is also citizens are able to report any concerns that they have as a result of folks not following regulations or the conditions of their permit.
Hey, Kelly, this is Megan Wagenblast in regard to that. That's fine and dandy, but if somebody's having a, just for the record, if somebody's having an event on a Saturday or a Sunday, there's no one at your office. And if it's a problem, who are we supposed to call? Thanks.
Well, I believe in that situation, and I we're kind of, sorry, Megan, we're closed for open comment from the citizens, but the...
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. It's a valid question, and I think what in that situation, at least my thought process would be, you would have to report it to the police or something, and they would have to make some sort of report, and then it would get probably passed on to codes enforcement, I would guess.
That's correct, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
You betcha. Okay, does any other commissioners have any questions or comments or anything before we move on to asking for a motion? Anybody have a motion they'd like to make?
I move that we adopt, Commissioner Ashton, I move that we adopt the presentation, whatever, chapters 1, 3, 6, 7, 13, 14, 19, and 20 as presented by the staff for adoption to and submission to the county court.
I would second that.
Is that Russ?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion on that? We have a first and second. Awful quiet, Commissioner Davis. It's kind of awkward.
Yeah, no, I'm not feeling all that great here.
Okay. Okay, I guess we can move on at this point. We can move on to a vote. I'm not hearing any discussion. So
I just want to say the reason I'm in support of Vicki's motion is that I feel, first of all, that the staff and the really years of work that's gone into this is pretty thorough and has moved the Ludo to a better place than it ever was. And then most counties are, frankly, in terms of it being readable and consistent and user-friendly. I also think that a lot of the stuff that we all struggle with, and we've heard some pushback from people today, and I know in previous sessions, and as a resident myself, some of this stuff is not... maybe what we want, but a lot of those things are really state mandated. And I think we've questioned in this meeting and in all the others and discovered either good reasons or in some cases mandated reasons. So I feel, and lastly, I was going to say, I do feel that this update does take into account the really serious issues that have been raised around fire, around enforceability. I mean, some of these issues are not solvable, but I think that this Ludo update does a good job of bringing us to a better place. So I want to acknowledge that it's not perfect, but I do think that it is a very good piece of work and the best that can be achieved given the circumstances.
I think that's well stated, Russ. I would need to agree with pretty much everything you said there. So anybody else have any discussion? Okay, I think we can move on to a vote to the motion is to send the recommendation for approval of the update on the land use and development ordinance, including revisions to chapters 1, 3, 6, 7, 14, 19, and 20, and the introduction of the comprehensive plan to the Board of County Commissioners. All in favor, say aye and raise your right hand, I guess.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, it passes. Staff, I would direct you to forward that on to the Board of County Commissioners.
Thank you, Chair.
And that would be the conclusion of the hearing. The decision of the Planning Commission was to recommend approval of the updates to the Board of County Commissioners, and the ordinance will be heard on October 19th and November 2nd by the Wasco County Board of Commissioners. And so that will close the hearing. One thing that we need to do is we need to vote to on the April minutes. I don't know if anybody wants to move to approve them.
I move that we approve them as presented. Hopefully, we all read them at that time.
Okay, Commissioner Ashley moves to approve. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Commissioner Davis seconds. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye. Waving the screen. Anybody opposed? Okay, and those pass. All right, Kelly, anything else you need me to do?
I don't believe so, Chair. If it's not too painful and echoey, I can give us a brief director's update.
It's pretty painful and echoey, Kelly.
Okay, so we can hold off. We've got another Planning Commission meeting on October 4th.
I would, as a further, just as a recommendation, I would probably find a different room to do it in. I think the room is the issue.
Okay. That's great feedback. That means that we will probably likely have to limit hearings, attendance, and do it at Wasco County facilities. This is the only place available currently for hybrid meetings. So we'll likely be limited to Planning Commission and staff only in our conference room in the future.
Yeah, that's fine.
If you put it on closed captioning, you could do it where you are and we can just read it.
I think the issue was nobody knew how to do that.
I am very positive there's at least a 10-year-old somewhere who could teach you all how to do it.
I don't know if the computer could have picked up Kelly's echo and printed it on the screen, to be honest with you.
I do think it's solvable. I agree with Megan on that. Let's take it offline. It looks like a nice room, but boy, we couldn't hear a thing. I mean, We could, but it was difficult to understand. It sounds like it would be a good place to sing with a large choir.
Good call, Russ. All right, Kelly, you have anything else for us?
Not much.
All right, I entertain a motion to adjourn if anybody wants to fly one out there.
I move to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Ashley moves to adjourn. Commissioner Hargraves removes seconds.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Davis, for attending with you. Our hotel. I appreciate it.
Mike, the ultimate trooper. All in favor? Aye.
Bye.
All opposed? Meeting's adjourned.